Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Injured at work in a motor vehicle accident or had a fall in a public space? Speak to Your Claim Lawyers, a no-win, no-fee personal injury claims law firm that specialises in maximising compensation claims for injured people. Call 1-800-YOUR-CLAIM or yourclaimlawyers.com.au.
The T20 World Cup is coming to our shores in 2020 with the best of the best striving for the ultimate glory. Before that all kicks off, let's join Mel Jones as she chats to cricket royalty on road to the T20 World Cup.
The road to the T20 World Cup isn't always smooth sailing, but as we're about to learn, it's the challenges along the way that have both shaped and moulded the South African women's cricket team and its wonderfully honest and sometimes fiery captain, Zandé van Niekerk. With a semi-final place in reach at the time of recording, a huge thanks to Cricket South Africa and Zandé for an interview that covers the widest of topics, from monster trucks to religion and everything in between, including, of course, why South Africa can win their very first ICC T20 World Cup.
Zandé, you've impressed me twice in the last 24 hours. First one is because of this interview. Thanks so much for doing it in the middle of a World Cup, which I know your schedule is absolutely manic. The other one was doing the interview yesterday after you went out for two. And can I say, without being too harsh, it was probably the worst shot I've ever seen you play in your entire life.
It's probably the worst shot, one of the worst shots I've ever played in my life. I was sitting in the change room thinking, what can I say? And I'm thinking, idiot, like, you can't say anything. I don't know what it was. A cricketer do experience that once in their life, hopefully. And I experienced that.
Some many times if I go to my career. But I think it was more the fact that I reckon and I do a lot of men's commentary, and this is not to say it's a good thing or a bad thing against the guys, but I don't think too many guys would have come out captain of their team in a national tournament and done an interview pretty much straight away. Did it ever cross your mind to say no to doing that interview?
No, I mean, the thing is, we're all human. To be honest, it was quite embarrassing. First of all, I've been hitting the ball really well, so I was just stunned by myself. And when I heard you guys wanted to chat, and I saw it was you actually, not because you were, but when I saw it was you, I mean, we've come a long way in the sense of like the Big Bash and stuff, so yeah. I'm quite comfortable with you and it is what it is. Like, I can't turn back time and say everybody saw what happened, and yeah. I guess I'd rather own up to it because I need to be an example for my teammates as well. And, yeah. And if I sit there and look for any excuse and every excuse, that's what my teammates will do, and mm-hmm. it'll be okay. So I've cracked the joke, and we cracked a couple more, and we haven't stopped since. It is what it is. Everyone's human. It happens. I'm sad it happened that way. It would have been nice to score a couple of runs. I always want to do well for my team.
Yeah.
I'm not a visualizer, but thinking about the game, I thought if I can get another, it's not about being player of the match, but it's about contributing for my team. And
yeah.
I always want to do that the best I can. So I was more annoyed with that. I was more annoyed sitting there and I'm not the person out there doing the job. Yeah. I think that's more that irritated me.
You say you're not a visualizer. So in terms of coming into games, what does your preparation look like?
I probably drink a beer the day before.
I'm gonna love this interview.
I obviously, depending on when, if it's a late game, I don't mind having a couple of beers at dinner. I mean, that's just who I am. Everybody knows me like that. It's not about the beer. It's just about me being me, and I'm not going to sit there and drink a water to impress anyone.
Yeah.
I know it's probably not the most athletic thing to do, but that's me. I don't have a routine, to be honest. I believe that, you know, I've been doing it for a very long time, and if I don't know my game by now, I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try and not the most religious person in the world. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm the biggest Christian in the world, but yeah. I am, and you know, I do my prayers and stuff before the game, and I try and do what I can before the day, and there I go. I mean, sometimes even my pre-match prep changes. I don't know.
So no superstitions?
No, I've thought about it so many times. Like sometimes I've hit balls before game and I had a great game, and then there's days I hit balls before game and I have horrible games and I think, no, can't hit balls. And then I started hitting balls again, so it's... Yeah. No, I don't. Honestly, I'd do my boning beforehand, though. I started that with the Big Bash now, with Benny and them. I just felt getting my rhythm.
Ben Sawyer from the
Sixers. Yes, yeah, I just, when I got to the ground, spikes on, didn't eat nothing.
Yeah.
Got, just to get my rhythm going, just to land a couple of balls, and then
then
I'll go and have my meal or whatever, just to get that. I think that's something I started, that's the only, I guess, routine I have at the moment.
Okay, so you're not like a Elise Perry, who you play with at the Sixers, who's got the same primary school sports socks on for every game or anything like that.
No, Bez has got funny things, though. But I mean, she's the best in the world at the moment, so I should probably learn from her.
I'll get you a pair of socks. Yeah, not that you need them any stretch. One question I ask everyone on the podcast, and you're the second last one, is your favourite sporting moment. And it can be absolutely anything. It doesn't have to be a game that you played in. It could be something growing up that you've seen on television.
I wanted to say the Springboks' first World Cup.
1995.
When Mandela was there. Yeah. It was, but I mean, I was 2 years old, so I couldn't remember. So I have to give it to... I'm just speaking the way I felt that day. And I'm sure the whole of the Sixers and the hotel we stayed at in Perth can vouch that I absolutely lost it in my room. I sat alone. I had 3 beers or 4 beers next to me. I sat and watched that game. And when we won, I remember one of the babies in the side, she said she heard me the whole way through. And that was just incredible. When we won that World Cup, Ben and them messaged me and they said, it wasn't Ben actually, it was Dave. He said, no. Come down, I'll buy you a beer. I said, I'm coming. And I walked, and it was cold, but I was walking with my Springboks jersey, and there was actually bombs walking past me, and the one guy spat at my feet.
So we're talking about the Rugby World Cup. So I went to WBBL.
Gotcha. The WBBL finals was incredible, don't get me wrong. And I was ecstatic.
This is making more sense to me now.
Yeah, sorry.
That's right.
The Springboks, just the way I felt, like just because it was my whole country. Like it wasn't like with the Big Bash, it's me and Cuppy, and you know, it's the Sixers family, and you want to make them proud, and it is incredible. Mm. But being a South African cricketer or sports person, just to know what that meant for the country, like that was freaky. It was incredible.
Well, you've mentioned the two Rugby World Cups. I think, can you try and explain what it does mean to South Africans? Because as an Australian, and I've been lucky enough to go to South Africa numerous times, and you get a sense of it, but it's hard to actually really grasp what sport has done for the country and what a national team winning means for them. Can you try and describe that a little bit more?
I guess everybody knows about apartheid. I mean, it's nothing to be... We're not obviously proud of it. It's nothing to be proud of. But it's part of... It's part of the history in our country, and you know, with that there's a lot of you know, I guess the country is divided sometimes and sometimes not, you know, and we know there's a lot of conflict going in South Africa, you know, the crime and all those things, so when that happens it's almost as if everything stands still. You forget about what happened, you forget about apartheid, you forget about colors of skin, you forget about everything. It's just about that moment. Everybody is just happy together for that team and what that team's done for the country. And I think that's I guess the thing about sport in South Africa is, and that's what we really want to do. We want to be those people that unite the country as well. I mean, that'll be incredible, just everybody being happy together about one thing, because all of us are not going to get along all the time, but for some reason when there's a sporting code or team that does well in a World Cup, we saw it with the netball as well, the whole of South Africa just like rises up,
and
I guess that's the nice thing about it, that gets me every time.
And you guys have Well, you're knocking on the door. You're getting close in this World Cup to... You were close in 2017 to get through to the final. You're playing well at the moment. You've beaten England. I'm jumping all over the place here. This is going to be later in the interview, but while we're here. What do you think it would mean? Because a lot of the big sporting events in South Africa have been around men's sport, rugby and cricket and football and the like. This would be a little... You mentioned the netball, but this would be something a bit different for the women's team to be in a position to win a World Cup and probably just change the conversation and change a few things back home?
It would. I mean, everybody's fighting this fight of women's sport. And yeah. I mean, you know, it's not... South Africa's not, I guess... I can't say modern because that just sounds weird, but I mean, just the thinking around women and sport and those things, we haven't really changed that mindset as quickly as we wanted to. So I think if...
So there's still a bit of a reluctance for change in that sense?
Yes and no. Yeah. I think we're getting there and we're pushing for, just like Australia has done and England and all those countries. I mean, it's a work in progress, but I think if something like this happens, though, we really desperately want the netball to win and we want the football or the soccer to win, just for that to happen quicker, that people can say, hey, okay, whoa, and just start thinking about taking it seriously and just realizing that, you know, that it is, women in sport is just as valuable as men in sport.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think it'll be incredible for us. It's still a long way to go. We know that, just that meeting. So we're like, it feels so close, but it's still so far. And there's a lot of hurdles to get over. But look, it's one thing the team as a collective want to do. And, you know, there's strength in unity that we know. And like Sia and the Springboks said, we're stronger together. So as a team, if we have that vision, hopefully we can, achieve that.
One South African athlete that I think has changed a lot of conversations is Caster Semenya.
Yeah.
Is that something that, and you just mentioned that the team as a collective has talked about wanting to shift things as well. What does she mean as an athlete to women in sport in South Africa?
Yeah, I think she's probably the main female athlete at the moment in South Africa. She, the thing that I like about her, she stands for what she believes in and she says what she means and she means what she say. I mean, if people have scrutinized her about all these things and she didn't let it... I mean, it's easy to just go into your hole and
completely,
accept it and say, you know what, you guys are right, I'm done with this, I'm done trying or whatever. And she just said, well, you know... stuff that I'm gonna show you, and I guess that's what we want from every woman in South Africa and I guess in the world, where we just say stuff that,
but
you're not gonna bring us down type of thing.
That.
So that's the nice thing that she's probably I guess taught us, if I can say it like that. She's been really, really great in that, and hopefully a lot of people learn from that and we can take that on board when we are speaking about, you know, the difficult conversations about women equality and all those things.
Yeah. There's a lot of young women and young girls in South Africa at the moment that are probably getting up early or late. Can't remember the time difference to early. Early to watch you guys play, and they would have been following, you know, the netballs, as you mentioned, and the like. When you were growing up, was there any women's sport visible that inspired you to play?
No, it's the men that inspired me to play. I guess like a lot of women's creators at the moment. No, there's no, not really. I knew about, but I didn't. There was nobody that really inspired me to say, okay, I'm gonna take up the game.
Right. So where did you get your love of cricket?
At home, I guess. Dad, mom, brother watched a lot of cricket. We loved cricket. My mom was in love with Neil McKenzie and like a handful of guys, so she really loved watching cricket for that. But I mean, I guess she fell in love with the game just as much as I did.
Did she like his cover drive or something else?
No, his face.
Yes,
that's what I loved. Kids my mom loved, and look, she fell in love with it. My dad's always been in love with cricket, rugby. You know, that's just the nature in South Africa, I guess, is soccer, rugby, and cricket, and. Yeah, I played with my brother.
Yeah.
I tried to do everything my brother did, and my brother took up cricket, and I wanted to do it better than him. And
was he a leg spinner?
But he was, actually.
Okay.
We actually started, I think we started the same year, and both of us naturally started bowling leg spin. My dad never taught us. He just came to us and said, there's very few spinners in the country at the moment, and if that's something you'd like. And funny
so
enough,
your dad Yeah. How old would you have been at this stage?
It was primary school, so I played a boys' game. There was probably seven or eight.
Right. And your brother would have been?
Nine.
So he was already thinking, my kids are going to play for South Africa.
Yeah, well, my brother was very talented. I'm not just saying he was incredibly talented, but, you know, it's very difficult for a guy. You know, the pool's a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to think about life after school, and you can't just up and leave everything just to pursue a dream that you maybe would make. Mm-hmm. Where with me, it was different. When you were picked out, it was the path was made easier for you to get into the South African side. I mean, so there was 13 people who told me that, you're going to play South Africa, like you're going to play it next year. It's different, I guess, for men. Yeah. I don't think they tell a 13-year-old that he'll play for South Africa in a year's time. So.
Well, I think a lot of the players that I played with in the 2005 World Cup probably told you that as well, because I'm sure you remember it. You were at one of our net bowlers at a training session. You would have been 12 years of age.
I was 8, yeah, so I was 11.
11. And yeah, I can remember Lisa Kightley, still the irony, Lisa Kightley, the coach of the England women's team now, has a photo, and I can picture it clearly. I've still got to find it at home somewhere, of the two of you after that net session, and you left, and we all just went, that kid's going to play for South Africa. Did you get that sense back then at all?
You guys told me that, so I had to believe it. You guys told me
that. We could not believe.
The Aussie, I remember Shelly Nishka bowling at me. She was so quick, but back then she was a spinner. And she was so incredibly quick. I was like, oh, am I going to face this? And that was one of, I guess, in my younger days, it was one of the most incredible days of my, I guess, growing up in cricket. Yeah. And getting to meet female cricketers, it was just one of the coolest days. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget Lisa Kightley ever. I mean, she's my enemy now at the moment. I had a good laugh after the game yesterday. She laughed at my shot. So, because I was lucky enough to be, she was assistant coach with Loughborough, so I was lucky enough to be able to work with her as well. Mm-hmm. And thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed working with her.
Yeah. What did you enjoy about her coaching?
I just think she thinks like a cricketer. That's what I enjoy about coaches, is when you speak to me as if you've been there, instead of just a manual. You know, she's, I laugh, I gave her the phrase she said to me at Loughborough, I scored a 98 or something against Surrey, and next day, like, I'm in the form of my life. 2 days later, I come, I get a duck, and I walk off, and I'm angry, and I said, okay, how can this happen? And she turned to me, she just laughed. She said, you know, one day you Don Bradman, the other day you Donald Duck. Don't worry. And I'd never forget that in my life. And I actually said those two words to her yesterday. I said, when I walked off, I thought of you, and I knew probably say that again. So,
I thought you were going to come out with some very Afrikaans saying that I still struggle to get my head around it.
No. That was from her, so okay. I doubt she understands Afrikaans.
She's not a big. She was on the podcast a couple before, and we did chat about how she'd prefer to sit in the hotel room than get out and about. So when she was in South Africa, she would certainly have not learnt any Afrikaans. Test match cricket, you've played one test. How big a thing is that for you? That's such a bad word, thing. You know what I mean? To play more test match cricket.
To be honest, after our first test, we didn't want to play test.
Well, it wasn't ever again. You lost by an innings and 34 runs.
No, 100 runs or something ridiculous. Oh, like we got
against India.
I can swear we got hurt that day.
We can beep it out. It's okay.
No, we got thrashed that day. Or that couple of days or whatever.
So, Kamini 192, Rout 130, Harmanpreet Kaur 9 wickets in the match.
Can't remember.
Okay, you wiped it.
I literally can't even remember. I know Geelong Goswami, because I was thinking, so we got there, there was a problem with our visas, and we only got there day before the test, or 2 days before the test match, so had a long drive to where we were.
In Mysore.
Yeah, and then they're like, we don't have an opener. You go, I said, I'll open. I mean, what's the difference between a red ball and a white ball? It can't be a massive difference.
What do you mean you didn't have an opener? They just didn't pick?
No. We haven't played because we went there for more ODI and T20.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, we just had to make do with what we kind of had. And Yeah, I was happy. I was like, done. I can do this. And I remember first ball of Julan, I saw and I was like, okay, no, this is, I got this. Second ball, short and wide, I cut. I edged it to the keeper. And I'm thinking, no way that I touched this because this. And then Hilton, our coach, he said, no, Dana, it's not that. It's not the same. Like, the ball moves. It moves a little bit more. And no, we didn't. You can even ask Kapi. She,
yeah.
We'd love to play it. If we get used to it, like England and Australia that's been playing it for years and years.
Yeah.
At least it comes every other year or yearly.
Yeah.
But that was the first time in my career. And
yeah.
Oh, it's long days. If there's somebody on 150 and...
That is...
We dropped a couple of catches that day as well, and it was just a horrific day. I remember Kapi bowling the first ball, and Kapi generally she hits the seam like,
yeah,
what, like she hits
over
the seam.
Over. Yeah,
there's very few times we get a ball back from her where it's scuffed up, and after the first overs, as it slipped, they threw the ball at me, and it was scuffed up on both ends, and I said no. Yeah, it wasn't a kuka, it wasn't a Duke ball. I don't know what ball it was, and I looked at the ball. It was
sort
the first
of very open. Lacquered, kind of, yeah.
I looked at it, and I said, this is going to be a long couple of days, like, this is going to be long. But I love to play it, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
I think it's the ultimate test of a cricketer. I believe that because I've been watching it my entire life, so
yeah.
I just wish that girls can grow up with a longer format, and not just thumb suck it when you get the odd opportunity to play it.
Yeah, okay. So you learn leg spin with your brother and your dad, and you get into the national team. Do you remember the phone call or the moment when you got the call up?
I was actually, it was a camp, and we were there. Funny enough, leading up to that camp, I couldn't bowl a ball. It was one of those things that happens to a cricketer where I couldn't find rhythm.
Mm.
And we had a Super Four, so they get the 48 best players, and you play against each other. And I was standing in my crease and bowling.
Right.
No run-up, nothing. Yeah. So it was scary, it was shocking. And
can you figure out why that happened?
I went for my parents were big believers in classes to help me like better my private lessons.
Right. Yeah.
And at that stage I couldn't understand why my action was changed, and I couldn't understand in my head what I should do, and I was changed to be a lot more similar to Shane Warne, and it just didn't work with me, so I ended up not getting through my action. And Yeah, the only guy that ever works for me personally when I speak about who I've worked with a length of time and was Jock Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad, Johan Rudolph.
Yeah.
Incredible leg spinning. Oh, if I could work with him till this day, I would have been very happy. Unfortunately, he moved away, but I couldn't. And then they picked me for the camp, and I couldn't believe it. But by that time, at a very young age, I mean, I was 14 then.
Yeah.
I had to work it out for myself. I had to work out my action. How can I get there? And it, funny enough, worked out. I had one of the best camps. And they sat there last day, like, okay, now we're going to give you the World Cup team. And I'm sitting there thinking, there's no...
It's 2009.
Yeah, there's no way. There's physically no way that I'll be able. I'm too young. There's no way. And my name was Stone Last because it went down with the alphabetical
order. Yeah.
And I just cried. I cried. I found my mom. My mom and dad almost fainted. And they cried. And it was a very happy day. I never thought I'd that young.
Yeah.
I'd ever. Everybody tells you, but when you get there and you play against, I mean, people that were there before me, you just sometimes don't feel like you're good enough. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
I do remember seeing you arriving 2009 World Cup. I was at North Sydney, and I did ring. I think I'm up text Kiders, and I went, you know that kid in the Nets we saw in 2005? She's here.
Yes, that's how cool. After that,
yeah.
That's freaky.
Okay, I'm going to throw a phrase at you, and I just want your first immediate reaction to this.
Okay.
Monster trucks.
Awesome.
This blew me away the other day. I just never would have picked you as a monster truck kind of gal.
Oh, no.
What is it about monster trucks?
It's just so cool. I mean, I've never really watched it, and my brother-in-law said he's going to take his son, I guess my nephew now. It's a bit odd with me and Kapi, and it's his sister's son.
Right.
So he said he's going to take him up, and I said, well, can I join?
Yeah.
He said, well, there's no reason you can't, because we get along really well. I mean, that's, they are my friends back home, so... I said, well, I'm going. And it was the coolest thing. I love cars, and I like speed, and I like these things. Kapi hates it, and I love it. And that was just freaking insane. The noise and the... Yeah, that was... I really enjoyed it.
Right. So does that translate in your personal life then? Like, in terms of cars? Like, are you finicky about what kind of car you drive? Do you have an aspiration to have something that goes exceptionally fast?
I do. Papa keeps me in check, so I drive all the time, so I can't really go fast, but when I'm alone I can. At the moment I've got an Audi A4, but really nice car. It's a 1.4 PFSI, but I'd like a 2 litre. That'd be nice. 2 litre diesel would be nice. I know Midge has one. She's got the S3.
Do you know your car? So you and Sammy Jo Johnson and the Brisbane Heat would get on.
I don't know. I probably don't know my cars as well as she does. Okay. But I just, like, I grew up with boys, and my best friends are men, mm-hmm. and boys. And so I guess that's just who I've always been. Spent a lot of time with my dad also. He loves cars as well. So cars and motorbikes, not as much, but yeah.
Cars, motorbikes, and ultimate fighting?
Yeah, I love it. Oh, yes. I love it. I honestly...
Would you do it?
No. I'm not a... I can fight with my words and I guess my body language, but I believe that females don't hit. You don't hit another female. There's nothing...
But
nice,
you're okay to watch another female?
It's difficult to watch the females hit each other. I take my hat off to them. You are proper tough when you stand there and wait for somebody to just stop booting you. But
do you find that a little bit ironic that we've just chatted about women in sport?
Yeah.
And we're talking about women just saying, stuff it, I'm going to do whatever. You're sort of not a big fan of women punching each other.
Don't get me wrong. If whatever floats, like, it's rugby, I won't be able to play rugby, but I respect people that can do it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to get hurt that much all the time. So I think that's it. I don't like getting hurt. When Kapi hit me the other day on my leg, and I can take pain, but for some reason a cricket ball hitting flesh, it's just not fun. There's nothing fun about it. So
I get it. WBBL and the Kiwi Super League, you've been involved pretty much right from the start of Big Bash and the Super League. How important have those two domestic tournaments been for you as a cricketer?
Yeah, I think I've said it a lot of times. When you get to a tournament like that and you're starting to find your feet in international cricket, you don't really know how good you are until you do well against the people that you've always idolised or been... You know, the world's been saying, let's be honest, in the first couple of years of my career, the Australians, the Englands, the Indias, the New Zealands were the big names. Yep. Eh? The players, you can have somebody from Pakistan, for instance, that maybe does the same in a match, but it doesn't really get spoken about as much.
Yeah.
But you have somebody in the big world, back in the day was the big four, the big three.
Mm.
That's a massive thing. So when you come up against them, you think, I'm not worthy, I can't... like, and then... you start playing against them, and it's just like anything else. Like, you get into your national team.
Yeah.
The moment you start doing well, you start feeling like you're worthy, and you start doing even better.
Yeah.
And that's how it felt. So I think for me, it's just when I start doing better against these players that I've always thought is, and still do believe that they are the best in the world.
Yeah.
You think, hey, I'm not that bad. And then you start getting to know them as people, as human beings, and... you start seeing what they do on a daily basis, and I mean, I have the world's respect for Bez. Like, there's the world's respect. She's incredible.
What is it about Elise Perry?
Just everything. Besides the fact that she is incredibly talented and amazing at cricket, she's an even better person, and I mean, somebody that gets massive amounts of attention. If you speak to her, you would never say that she is who she is, and I have a lot of respect for that, because she doesn't treat you any different to anyone else, if I can say it like that.
And
she doesn't feel like she needs to get treated differently. And,
So
you just get to see what they do, and I will never be able to mimic what she does, to be fair, what most of these players do, but pick small things up and you try and implement it. And I think it's a big reason why some of my teammates and myself has really risen in world cricket, is because now when I play you, when you have your Aussie shirt on, I know you're a little bit different to those, when you see them and your eyes just go. When I played against Karen Ralton for the first time, I froze, because that's somebody that I like.
Yep.
This woman hits the ball very far, so how can I bowl to her?
Uh-huh.
Other things. So I think that's the thing. That's the main thing for me about these leagues, is the fact that you just get to know players, and you get confidence in yourself, I guess.
If let's say Australia doesn't win this T20 World Cup, would you say that part of it could be because of the amount of overseas players that have come and played within the WBBL, and they have lost that fear factor of playing Australia?
I think it contributes. I'd be stupid to say no. I'd be stupid to say, oh, no, it's just what it is. You have to give the leagues and the Big Bash the credit that it's due. Women's cricket needed something like that, and not to the benefit of Australian cricket in that sense, but I think they must understand that what they've done for the game is means a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, flip, they've already won four T20 World Cups. Can they relax a little bit and stop being so greedy?
You've impressed me three times now because you've said flip instead of something else. Well done, you.
Thanks, I'm trying.
Coogee Bay Hotel, that's where you reside when you're in Australia.
Yes.
Enjoy your home away from home.
Love it. It's so nice to be back here.
It's a great spot.
It's so nice to be back here. It's, when we drove here, it's so weird. It's like, you know the roads, you know everything. I never thought in my entire life I'd know the roads in Sydney.
Like,
I don't know it really well, but everything's familiar and I can get around, so it's... Oh, I love it. Coogee's, I told the team, whatever happens tomorrow, we should try and get a day out to Coogee. I want to show them the places. They
beach
must,
and the walk. Yeah.
It's beautiful. Okay. We're very fortunate.
Okay. Just don't show them how to cut an avocado.
No.
Okay.
That's
we'll leave that to the pros. Fortunate enough on Road to the T20 World Cup podcast, we've had on Belinda Clark, Amy Satterthwaite, Heather Knight, Meg Lanning. So all captains of their countries. When you got the captaincy in 2016, when Mignon stepped down, was it a surprise to you? Did you always aspire to be captain of your nation?
Yeah, I did. I did aspire. I mean, my whole life, that was my goal. I just didn't think it would happen that quick, because I knew that Mignon had a lot of cricket in her. And when they called me in and told me that Ming stepped down and I'm next, I was actually taken aback. I cried a little bit, I'm not going to lie. Obviously, it's a massive honour. If it's not an honour, I think there's something wrong with you. So, I didn't think it would happen that quick.
In terms of leaders across sport, politics, whatever, was there people that you sort of looked at and thought, I like those qualities in a leader?
Oh, that's difficult. I can't say yes, because, I mean, you can look at the leaders, the famous leaders, the Nelson Mandelas and, all these people, but... the way they led, I don't really know 100%. I just kinda, I am a bit more fiery, and I did have a sit down and with the people that picked me a bit higher up there in CSA, and they were just like, we understand how you are, but you need to find a way to move your aggression into to getting the team to want to follow you instead of fearing you. So that was the transition I kinda had to make.
Did you have to do that personally, or did they help you with, sort of like a leadership course or a mentor or something along those lines?
No, I think I was quite lucky, because I've been playing cricket for a long time with the same players, so they kind of understood where I came from. It wasn't like me coming in from a different company and I'm this boss now all of a sudden and you just get this fright.
Yeah.
So they kind of knew what to expect, but I just had to find a way to to get them to buy into who I am, and obviously I had a lot of chats with the players, and all of them know it's never personal on the field. It's just more about getting the best out of everyone. My style's way different to Mignon, like day and night difference.
So give us a couple of words that would describe Mignon's leadership style.
See, that's English now, so it's difficult. But for me, Minx is she's a motivator. Not that I'm not, but Minx is a motivator and an energizer and a positive person. So not that I'm not one of them, but I'm a different, I'm aggressive, I'm a talker, I say it how it is, and I'd rather be honest and I take it by the scruff of the neck than...
Yeah.
So, yeah, and Minx is a way better captain off the field than I'd ever be.
It's important to have her around? And
oh, absolutely. I said to Hilton, I'd love her to take over the... I said, can we not start an on-field, off-field captain, you know, where they start the T20 ODI test?
Oh, right,
Love an off-field captain because... You don't like ask Lucy, oh, I throw my toys every time. Then hey, you need some. No. She started coming to me and saying, no, she'll... She get Chloe to do some of the post-match or all the pre-match stuff, so I just...
You don't enjoy it? It's not... Is that part of it, or...?
That's not how I am.
Yeah.
But Graham Smith is our new director of cricket, and I had a chat to him, and he just said he never enjoyed it, but he embraced it because he said, if I keep on fighting, it's not going to go away, so he embraced it, part of the job. I'm 4 years down the line. Yeah. I'm still trying.
Because you and him would have been almost the same age when you got the captaincy of...
Yeah, he was a little bit younger than I was. He was the youngest. Mignon was the same age as I was.
Yeah.
I think it was, 22? Yeah, 23. So.
Okay. Talking about off-field challenges, it's one of the areas of South African sport that no other country within the cricket space anyways has to deal with in terms of quota systems.
Yeah.
It's been there for... since you've come into the team. Is that a difficult thing to juggle, or is it just sort of almost part of the furniture these days?
Yeah, we don't actually speak about it at all, to be honest. You know, it's part of I guess who we are, and I understand why it's there. I don't fight it at all, and I don't have no need to worry about it at all. You know, each and every player that's in this side thoroughly deserves to be here. There's no doubt in my mind that somebody's here for alternate reasons, and I'm not just saying it, that's the honest truth, and you know, most of it that's it's never really been part of that as well, so and I think that makes it nice when it comes to, I guess, the camaraderie within the team and the vibe within the team, because that we don't have that issues, nobody questions it, there's no question about it. I mean, I know there was a bit of talk about it earlier with Themba Bavuma, but we don't have those issues. We don't have people coming to us and saying, what is this?
Yeah.
I mean, Naya Bonga is just rocking it up there with the new ball. And again, I'm saying, I'm classy, Tumi. I mean, people is going on about Tumi, lefty that's coming in. I mean, it's not it. There's no issue about it. It's people that... I'm lucky as a captain to not have those issues.
So you'd be almost the envy of a lot of national sides that it isn't.
I think so, and I think it's not something that should be an issue. I think there's a reason why it's put in place, and I respect those reasons, and you know, and with time, again, like with us, it shouldn't be spoken about. It should be just get picked and go play and represent your country.
Yeah, I like it. One of the other challenges, I guess, as a captain and senior player in the team is having your wife in the same team as well. Sometimes, I suppose, perception can be reality for some people sometimes. So some people might sit back and go, well, that could cause so many problems. But from an outsider looking in, it seems just to work really well. What are the challenges that you face? Because you're probably, if I could say this, the perfect example of opposites attracting in some sense.
No, that's... the fact. That's the flat out truth. I don't think there's any more opposite people I've ever seen that's been together the way that obviously me and Kapi is. It is difficult. I think people have this perception of, oh, so nice you're touring with your wife. You know, you see the world together, and it is amazing. Like, we speak about it all the time. Like, how lucky are we? We don't miss our better half. Like, Mignon misses her husband, and the coaching staff missing their wives and their kids, and You know, some of my teammates within their halves. Yeah. But we also have our own challenges about juggling, working together, and obviously having your personal life when you get into the room. Have a bad net, how do I not take it into the room? Have a bad day when it comes to selection, or just the question I maybe had, you know, after a game that we lost, not to take it into...
Yeah.
So there's a lot of positives, but there's also its negatives. And it sometimes, you know, it affects our relationship quite negatively as well. I mean, if you don't know how to get out of it, it can cause quite a bit of a problem, and not just between the two of us, but also within the side. I mean, we've been there, and I think if people tell me that they haven't been there, if there's relationships within a side, then I'd be very surprised, because we all are human. We're going to have our bad days, and you're going to say something in front of your teammates to that person that you probably shouldn't. But I feel fortunate to have been able to do it for 10 years with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've found a way now
how
to juggle it. And we don't get it right all the time, but I feel like we're getting it right most of the time now.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have it any other way. I don't think I'd make it if she's not with me on tour. and again, we are opposites. So the things she likes, I let her do.
Yeah.
Don't like shopping, so she goes out with Mignon and they paint the town red. A lot of they go crazy. Cards come out and they come back with bags.
And what's your release?
Sit and watch UFC, or I go watch sports somewhere, have a lunch, have a beer, and that's me, or play golf. So I enjoy my golf as much as I can. So
radio. So during the 100, you playing 100?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So golf and beer when we're over for the 100.
Absolutely. That's me. That's
perfect.
Me in a nutshell.
Done. I'm trying to take up a bit more golf, and I love a beer, so we'll be back on it by then. The other one I wanted to chat about with the team, which is the other major sort of point of difference, I think, is religion within the side as well. And I've seen the South African team for numerous years now, and I think it was the first time I went there was 1999. So I know it's a very big part of just South African life. And it's, I suppose, as an opposition player, you'd sort of look at it and go, well, that's just different, you know. And how does it work in a team that has players from so many different backgrounds? Is that a tough thing to try and juggle?
Because
not everyone in the team would be Christian.
Definitely. And that's the thing, though, that we had the signature thing where we went down on our knees and we said Our Father prayer, and we just had a chat, and I had some chat with some of the management as well, and I was led by Russell, our trainer, a little bit more in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And he said some stuff, and he made me think about it. And actually, at the World Cup, I stopped it completely, and I just said it's not fair to somebody.
So which World Cup was this?
The 2018 World Cup, actually.
T20.
Yeah, I just said, I called in the seniors, and I said, I don't feel like it's fair for me to tell somebody that's a Muslim or a Hindu or whatever to go on their knee and say that Father prayer. I wouldn't. If somebody comes to me and says I have to pray something different, I would tell them to go. I mean, we've done that so many times and for so long, and I just felt like we were contradicting ourselves in front of the whole world. You know, everybody's thinking, oh wow, but what are they actually doing? Because we know there's so many different cultures.
Yeah.
So I think from that day on, it was not like we didn't embrace cultures. I mean, we didn't speak it again. It's just the same like the transformation thing. We don't speak about it. It's not an issue in the team. And I think that also changed a little bit of the dynamics, because people didn't feel forced. People didn't feel forced to go on their knee and say something or pray something that they didn't feel comfortable with. And that just makes you comfortable already if you don't have to do stuff like that. And it's difficult, but it's not, because we don't have issues with it. We don't. I mean, Shibi is a Muslim. She does her thing.
Yeah.
Like, some of us are Christian. We do our thing. And
Did you get any backlash from back home at all? Because it seems a big part of most South African sporting teams. Like, you see the rugby team do it and the likes. There was no one sort of questioned why you would stop doing it.
No, and if they do, they can come. They can phone me personally. I don't feel like it. In a team environment, you need to feel welcome, and then you'll flourish as a player. So if you don't feel welcome and you can't be yourself, how can you you give your best and flourish, you know, in this environment. So it's all about including people and accepting them for who they are and what they believe in, even though you don't accept it. Or not accept it, but you don't do that.
Yeah.
Or believe in the same thing. It doesn't matter because your end goal is the same. You want to win a World Cup and you want to make your country proud. So that's probably the focus.
What are you going to do after cricket?
I don't know.
That little speech there, I think. Not going into politics?
No. I don't know. That's a great question.
Never really thought about it?
No, I was thinking, like, maybe somewhere in cricket, but I don't know. I was always thinking, like, going to business. I've got a keen passion for business, but I don't know what.
Okay.
Like, I'd like to start my own thing, but I don't know what. That's all that.
I
don't know if I'd be able to stay in cricket, but I know it'd be part of my life. So
yeah.
I mean, if I get something in cricket, after cricket, I mean, that falls in my lap. I'll definitely not go search for something.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a case of somebody really wanting me there to keep me there, type of thing.
Interesting. We're going to make sure that we do this podcast in 10 years' time. see where you're at.
We're probably done, but with cricket by for a very long time, yes.
Alrighty, let's get on to this World Cup. Did you see the game that's just finished, New Zealand-Bangladesh?
Yes.
Has this World Cup been, I mean, you've played in a lot of them now, the most unpredictable World Cup you've seen?
Absolutely. Yes, I didn't see it happening. Mm. But I thought Bangladesh was in for a shout. Having said that, I knew that New Zealand had a great chance of getting to the finals the way I saw them play before we came here.
Let's go back to Perth, because we've got to talk about one of the biggest wins of your career, probably.
Yeah.
Such a big build-up to your first ever win over England in an ICC World Cup in 50-over or T20. I'm going to go back again to 2017, because I was there that day. I think everyone was heartbroken, bar, obviously, the English supporters, when you were just, you know, a delivery away, basically, from getting through to the final at Lord's. Devastation doesn't even really probably encapsulate what I saw that day. How long did it take you personally to get over that game?
It took me a while.
Yeah.
Probably a good, I think only after 8 months.
I
think as a captain, when it's that close, I was just beating myself up because of the angles, because of where that ball went. I just keep on thinking of where that ball went.
On SEN, this is Road to the T20 World Cup with Mel Jones.
Okay, so that's weird, isn't it, that you would go back to just that one delivery, not anything else that happened before that. Why does your mind go back just to that one ball?
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of things in that game that happened that we could have changed, but the way we fought back, I couldn't ask for better from the team. I mean, we were dead and buried. I mean, let's be honest, it was Heather Knight and Sarah Taylor that was out there, and they were cruising the game. And the way we came back, I couldn't ask. I just felt like that was me in my hands. That why didn't I take that 2 seconds to just check with Shibnam, where are you going to go? What's your plan?
Yeah.
And make sure that my field's 100%. It went to my left, Minion's right. So that means it was just a little bit straight there.
Yeah.
If I just moved myself either a bit square or me on straight, it would have been straight to the field. It would have given us a chance. That 2 seconds, and I guess it took me a good solid 8 months to just forget about that.
Did you think of that game at any stage during the game against England and Perth?
No, not at all. No. We had our plans, and that's all I focused on, is to make sure that...
So even when you were getting close, when Mignon was out in the middle, in a 100th T20 game...
I promise you, not once. I just sat there and said, the only thing I thought about is we just need to be on the other side for once. That's all.
Yeah.
Because we've been on the losing side too many times with this close game. Somewhere, as a team, it needs to turn, and it did. So Mings was incredible. I walked out, and when I went out, and I just said to her, just win. And she said, I'm gonna win this.
Yeah.
Don't you worry.
Yeah.
But she looked at me like that. I was like, okay, you got this. Just gonna go pan. Okay, I'm acting all cool now. I was sitting in the showers in the back, closing my ears, and I said to Kapi, she must come call me when it's the last over. I don't want to hear anything.
You didn't watch?
No, I went out the last over. I didn't watch.
So the last over, you did not see the delivery.
No, I watched the last over.
Right.
But since I went out the 16th over,
yeah.
I sat in the shower and I closed my ears because I can't watch cricket. I get too nervous.
That is unbelievable.
I get too nervous.
So what's going to happen before I get there to this one? Can you win the World Cup?
Yes.
Okay. So put yourself at the MCG on International Women's Day, March 8, and you're playing... Who do you think you'll play?
I said just because of the 90,000 people, to get them there, Australia.
Okay.
But I do think New Zealand's looking good.
Right. Even after today?
Even after today.
Rightio. Okay.
It's a bold call, but...
Because I'm sitting here, we're going to go with Australia.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I said it initially. It's all that we need to get that record, so...
This is also true. I'm going to come back to that as well. So, March 8, you're playing Australia. You're batting second, and you get to this same situation. Will you sit in the change rooms, or you sit out there and watch?
I'll probably sit in the change rooms. The team knows it's myself, Chloe, and Russell.
Mm.
We're the worst watchers ever.
So it probably helps it not having you around.
Yeah, we are. Bad. I can't, like Hilton told me, because I came out the last over and so I got the leg by.
Yeah.
And I just got out and I was standing there and he said, come sit here. And I said, don't tell me what to do. I don't want to sit down. And he said, no, come sit. But he was very calm with this. Sit down. He says, this is the best part. This is the best part of the game. I said, excuse me? This is the best part. Like, I can't breathe. Like, just leave me be. And he said, just sit down. And then... Mings went bang, and then she goes bang, and then but he knows I'm horrible. The whole team knows. They know when they don't see me, that I'm somewhere, probably diving in the ice bath, trying to get my head underwater, so I can't hear anything. I was shouting at the TV to get the volume down. I was like, can somebody put the TV off?
Did you thank him for making sure that you stayed out there? What's your relationship like with Hilton?
Oh, very good. Mm. We've come a long way. I mean, he's been with us since 2013, so.
Mm.
Been 7 years, very good relationship. I can speak to him about anything. I can speak to him the way I want to. Sometimes not a good thing, but he prefers it. He's a great listener.
Yeah,
I think you know, he's done really great stuff with the team during his time, and I really is like got a great relationship.
Before I get to the final, I just want to ask, 2022, it's been confirmed. The World Cup, T20 World Cup, the next one will be in South Africa, as you give a little fist pump.
Yes.
How big is that?
That is incredible. The first thing I thought about is our families. You know, like financially, we couldn't always get everyone out there. I mean, we got bits and bobs with moms and that, but to be able for all our, like our whole family to come and watch every game is just, I know that myself and Marizan's family and obviously the players' families are going to...
It's massive because the rand is not, it's not the strongest currency going around.
No,
so easier for English and Australian supporters to travel with teams.
Exactly. So that's the first thing I thought about. And I actually said to Marizan before I came here, I said, Lucy just sent me that. But I think you mentioned it to me as well. I said to her, did you know the World Cup's in 2020? Mm. 22, and she said, really? Wow, that's awesome. I said, how cool would it be for us to defend a World Cup at home? How cool would that not be? So, yeah.
Do you defend one or do you win another one?
Well, we're going to go and we want to defend one and win it again, but it'll be nice to go and defend one if we're done, so.
Okay. International Women's Day, March 8, jam-packed MCG. What would it mean for you personally to see a stadium that size, full of people watching women's cricket?
For me, obviously, it'll be amazing. But I think for every other cricketer that came before me, it should mean way more in the sense of we came from literally nothing.
Mm.
And we built it up to this. Like, it should tell the players before us that whatever you did it right and you done good by us. Yeah. So, I think it should be more, it should go more to the people before us than us actually being there. It'll be amazing. I mean, I've never played in front of a massive crowd, but for me, I think the meaning is that the people before us, that we feel like sometimes we have it tough, this isn't in place and this isn't in place, but the stories I've heard in my lifetime of people before us and the players before us, it's just chalk and cheese, I want everybody before us to know that we are thankful.
Yeah.
That I guess that I'll be thankful when I'm there.
Yeah, that's a wonderful acknowledgement. Katy Perry's singing. Would you have preferred Bryan Adams?
No. I said to my whole team, I don't know what they're playing for, but I'm playing to get to the final to stand on the stage with Perry. That's incentive enough for me. So.
Okay. With beer in hand?
Absolutely. Probably two. Okay. It would probably be two in my hand.
I would love to stand next to you on stage with a beer in your hand.
Yeah, because you'll be able to drink
beer. I will be able to that. Danae, thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it. I've absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it, and I've gone way over time. I think you are now officially my longest podcast.
I'm sorry, but I speak a lot, so...
No. Speak good stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That's awesome.
For logbook servicing you can rely on, you need to make the right choice. You need trained professionals who are fully qualified to service your car according to manufacturer's specifications. For real peace of mind and a nationwide warranty, book in or book online at repcoservice.com.